etat this me by me Bhagavan powerful Prishtaha when he was requested Prajakamasya desiring offspring Padmajaha Lord Brahma who was born of a lotus flower Yat Aha he said Te Pavakshyami I shall explain in the form of worship Keshavatoshanam by which Keshava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied. Translation. Sri Kashyap Muni said, when I desired offspring, I placed inquiries before Lord Brahma, who is born from a lotus flower. Now I shall explain to you the same process Lord Brahma instructed me, by which Keshava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied. Here the process of devotional service is further explained. Kashyapa Muni wanted to instruct Aditi in the same process recommended to him by Brahma for satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is valuable. The Guru does not manufacture a new process to instruct the disciple. The disciple receives from the Guru an authorized process received by the Guru from his Guru. This is called the system of disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidhu. This is the bona fide Vedic system of receiving the process of devotional service. Bona fide spiritual unified because he has received the mercy of his guru. This is called the parampara system. Unless one follows this parampara system, the mantra one receives will be chanted for no purpose. Nowadays, there are so many rascal gurus who manufacture their mantras as a process for material advancement, not spiritual advancement. Still, the mantra cannot be successful if it is manufactured. Mantras and the process of devotional service have special power, provided they are received from the authorized person. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun miditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, my spiritual master Srila Prabhupada open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So this is kind of a... I didn't have much notice, so forgive me. All the Prabhupada's books on it, and I have some references there. So kind of the theme here, if we kind of put this in context, we find that the demons, headed by Maharaj, became very powerful because they followed their spiritual master, Shukracharya, which was actually killed in a previous battle. He was brought back to life by Shukracharya. And then he very carefully followed his instructions. The demons became empowered to take over the heavenly planets, Indrapuri. And so the demigods went to Brihaspati and asked, well, what should we do when Bali was at the gates? They said, well, they're so powerful now because of their following their spiritual master that you can't conquer them. Only Krishna can help you. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can get this kingdom back. So you better leave. And so they all left the heavenly planets. And this was extremely distressing, not only to the demigods, but the demigods' wives and the mother of the demigods, Aditi. So Aditi now is very distressed. And when her husband comes back from meditating and doing some austerities, he finds her in this distressful condition. She explains what's happened. And now he's going to give her some instructions by which she can satisfy the Lord, and the Lord will then help her to her and her sons, the demigods, to regain the kingdom. So the kind of the mood here, or the theme is, and Prabhupada focuses on this in the purport, is the necessity of carefully approaching a bona fide spiritual master and following the instructions if we want to be empowered to follow the process of devotional service and achieve our goals in devotional service. Now, Aditi apparently has a kind of a material motive here, and that is to regain the kingdom. But it all turns out well in the end, because the result of her desire is that Vamanadeva appears, which is all auspicious, and we know the story. I don't want it to focus on this principle. It's all a seed of devotional service in the form of the instructions and the mantras from the spiritual master and watering that seed and seeing the bhakti lata or the creeper of devotion grow. And to that end, I wanted to refer to Madhyalila Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 19, that portions Brahmande Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasada. In this very wonderful analogy, if you will, how the spirit, by the mercy of both the Guru and Krishna, one receives this seed of devotion, the bhakti lata bija, this bija. And then one needs to carefully plant that bija in one's heart and nourish it by chiefly by the process of hearing and chanting, shravan kirtan jal. So I'd like to read the second verse here after this, where Lord Chaitanya begins to describe how one has to become a gardener and pull up the weeds of offenses and other things. But this purport goes, the second verse of this series, Mali hanya kade se bija aropan, shavana kirtana jale kade se chan. Let's see if this thing works. When a person receives the seed of devotional service, he should take care of it by becoming a gardener and sowing the seed in his heart. If he waters the seed gradually by the process of shavana and kirtan, hearing and chanting, the seed will begin to sprout, purport. To live with devotees, or to live in a temple, associate with the shravan kirtan process, hearing and chanting. Sometimes the shravan kirtan process without execution of such shravan kirtan is meant for highly developed devotees like Haridas Thakur, who in the shravan kirtan process without worshipping the deity. However, falsely imitate Haridas Thakur and abandon deity worship just to try to engage in shravan kirtan. This is not possible for neophyte devotees. The word Guru Prasad indicates that the spiritual master is very merciful in his devotional service upon the disciple. That is the best possible gift the spiritual master has to offer. Those with a background of pious life are eligible to receive life's supreme benefit. And to bestow this, the Supreme Lord sends his representative to impart his mercy. Endowed with the mercy of the Supreme Lord, the spiritual master distributes the mercy to those who are elevated and pious. Thus, the spiritual master trains his disciples to render devotional service unto the Lord. This is called Guru Kripa, the mercy of the Guru. Krishna's mercy that he sends a bona fide spiritual master to the deserving disciple. By the mercy of Krishna, one meets the bona fide spiritual master, and by the mercy of the disciple is fully trained in the devotional service of the device. There is first of all the conceptual contemplation, and that is called the bija or seed. The methods, the rules, and the regulations by which one is trained in devotional service constitute the bhakti lata bija, devotional service. This bhakti lata bija is received from the spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. Other seeds, anyabilash, include karma bija, jnana bija. If one is not fortunate enough to receive the bhakti lata bija from the spiritual master, he instead cultivates such seeds as karma bija, jnana bija, or political, social, or philanthropic bijas. However, the bhakti lata bija is different from these other bijas. The bhakti lata seed can be received only through the mercy of the spiritual master. Therefore, one has to satisfy the spiritual master to get the bhakti lata bija. The bhakti lata bija is the origin of devotional service. Unless one satisfies the spiritual master, he gets the seed or root cause of karma, jnana, and yoga without the benefit of devotional service. But one who is faithful to his spiritual master gets the bhakti lata bija. This seed is received when one is initiated by the bona fide spiritual master. After receiving the spiritual master's mercy, one must repeat his instructions. And this is called shravan kirtan, hearing and chanting. One who has not properly heard from the spiritual master, who does not follow the regulative principles, is not fit for chanting or kirtan. This is explained in the Gita, Vyavasayatmaka Budhir Ekeha Kurunandana. One who has not listened carefully to the instructions of the spiritual master is unfit for chanting or for preaching the cult of devotional service. One has to water the bhakti lata bija by receiving instructions from the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, I thought I would share that with you. It was a little long, but I think it's all nectar and very important instruction. And this, of the Madhyalila, of Lord Chaitanya's instructions, is really important for all of us who want to advance in devotion. We've all received this seed, instructions, rules, and regulations of bhakti, but why to follow them? Remember, Sambandha Priyojana. Sambandha is all about who we are, who is Krishna, who is God, what is this world, what are the relationships. And having understood these things, one should have the impetus to practice devotional service. So this is all about the practice, right? One receives the instructions. Now, about how to practice devotional service. And by hearing and chanting, repeating what we've heard from the guru, from the shastra, we water that seed. So in the course of Lord Chaitanya's instructions here, he also explains naturally about the weeds that can grow up that are also in the heart. These other bijas that Prabhupada talks about, philanthropic bij, karma bij, they are already quite developed. They're more than bijas. They're very strong overgrowth or undergrowth, if you will, in the heart of all kinds of desires, very strongly developed desires that we have been nourishing for lifetimes, millions of lifetimes. So this little seed of devotion has a chance to flourish, but it also has a chance to be overwhelmed by the other latas, the other creepers, the other weeds, if you will. So we have to become a gardener. We have to become a gardener. Now, a gardener, if he's going to be a good gardener, he has to look to see how to best nourish the plant and how to best destroy and starve and pull up the weeds. So you have to know what they are. It's not just that there's one kind of weed, and maybe other, many different kinds of weeds. Some are very small, and you have to pick them out, make sure that they don't undermine the plant that you're trying to grow. So that also comes in here. He gives examples, Lord Chaitanya does, of the different kinds of weeds that can grow up and choke the creeper. So he talks about nishadacharya, about behavior not appropriate to devotees. We have to know. That's part of what the shastra is. What's to be done and what's not to be done. This is the difference between the demons and the... Lord Krishna explains in the 16th chapter, the demons don't know what's to be done and don't know what's not to be done. And they don't care to know. They just want to know how they can best satisfy their own desires. So those who have a pious background, those who are wanting to be devotees, we're very concerned, we should be very concerned, what is the proper behavior? And both positive get, or we may do things that are not appropriate to devotees. All kinds of behavior or the creeper. Another one is jiva hinsa, violent toward other living beings. Now, of course, we're all vegetarians. That's the first thing. But at the same time, we also have for all the human beings. And Prabhupada explains in a section about knowledge, verses 8 to 12, I believe, this long list of elements of knowledge, one of which is ahimsa. But in that purport, Prabhupada talks about how ahimsa just doesn't mean refraining from doing harm to others, but it means giving others the medicine by which they can relieve all of their suffering. In other words, if we're not part of the Sankirtan movement, the preaching movement, some way or other, then we're doing violence. We're not following that ahimsa program. So that's a very interesting take on nonviolence. It's not just negative, but it's also positive. So what to speak of doing violence to others or animals or devotees or any kind of living entity, that's definitely a big weed that we have to pull up. Another one is desire for name and fame. This can be a subtle weed. If someone becomes a little advanced in devotional service, may get some responsibility, fixed in the service somehow, then naturally certain accolades and honor may come. And if one begins to let that go to his head, then that becomes a weed. You begin to desire some result for your devotional service. And that can be a subtle but very powerful blockage in advancement. Another one is becoming too concerned with accumulating wealth. This also is something that can come if someone is following very nicely and leading a very regulated life. Then Lakshmi may smile on that person and suddenly the wealth is coming into their hands. If they don't use it for devotional service, that can also become an impediment to the growth of this creeper. And of course, there's a whole category of aparad. Aparad, and Lord Chaitanya speaks about the maha aparad of the mad elephant offense of disrespecting the spiritual master. Now, I'm not going to read that purport, but there's some very interesting statements in that particular purport where Prabhupada is talking about this great offense of, against the spiritual master. And he says there that not following the main way in which you perform that offense, guru avagya, disrespecting the spiritual master, is not following the instructions. Sometimes you don't remember that. Says, well, I would never dream of offending Srila Prabhupada in any way by insulting or something like that, naturally, or any of Vaishnavas. And yet, by not following the instructions, that is a form of disrespect. And Prabhupada makes it very clear in this these purports here that that will choke off one's kripa of devotional service, naturally. So this pastime here of the Payavrata ceremony, which is what the chapter we're in now, this is a the general principle here is purification so that Krishna will appear in one's heart. Here, she's actually going to appear from the womb, if you will, or from the heart, and take birth in the form of Vamana Dev. But this idea also reminded me of the cleansing of the Gundicha, which is another, there's a very nice long purport at the end of that section, in chapter 12 of the Madhya Lila, where Lord Chaitanya himself cleans the temple of Gundicha with all his devotees. He shows the way. And the whole idea is that, as explained by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his commentary and quoted by Prabhupada, is that this is equal to cleansing the heart so that Krishna will be pleased to sit there. If our heart is dirty, and the same list that is given here in the 19th chapter is given in that purport by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as dirty things in the heart, that we may clean, but then the dirt accumulates again. So there has to be a constant cleaning because we're living in the Kali Yuga. If we're not constantly, we'll know that dirt will come in and again contaminate the heart. So cleansing one's consciousness, purifying the consciousness through in this specific process of aditis given, by which Krishna will appear in the form of Vamana Dev. But we are also trying to invite Krishna to appear in our and that means purification. It's very encouraging to remember that we are all originally Krishna conscious living beings, right? And we have become contaminated because of our contact with the material energy, the modes of nature. So it's not something new. It's just like you have a room that may get dirty, but if you clean it, it will revert to its original state, pristine state, and it'll be very nice. So our original state of our heart and our consciousness is pure Krishna consciousness. But now that's been obscured. We have this dust of lust, right? Cheto Dharpa Namarjanam. We cannot see ourselves, we cannot see Krishna, we forget completely about our relationship. So all of the processes that were given in the process of devotional service are really purification processes. Prabhupada talks about deity worship, how important it is to come together and to see the beautiful deity, to worship the deity, to chant the holy name, and other songs in front of the deity, to sit for Bhagavatam class. It is all part of staying pure. This is all part of cleansing the heart, Cheto Dharpa Namarjanam, so that when it's perfectly cleansed, that Krishna will be pleased to come and sit there. This is what's described in the Gundicha pastime. So it's good to remember that, but it is a constant effort, especially before we become in that long stage, before we release. It's very possible to slack off on the cleansing process, namely the process of sadhana bhakti, and allow these impurities to come in. So we need to be introspective and really take stock. And that's one of the reasons why the Shastra is so important. When we read these things, it immediately brings us up to the standard, at least intellectually. We understand, these are the qualities of a devotee. What have I been doing this for? You know. But if you neglect to read, neglect to hear from the Shastra, then gradually you forget. Right? You can easily forget all of this knowledge, just as we did once before, or many times before. How did we get here? We forgot. So we can do that even in this state. So therefore, it's an effort. One has to be dridhavrata. One has to have a firm vow to really follow the process. Because if we're not moving forward, we're sure going to be moving backward in this process of purification and watering the seed. So we have some time for discussion. I can read the verse once more. Forgive me, I didn't have too much time to prepare. So that he's going to go now in the next verse to start the actual description of Prayavrata. When I desired, Kashyapa is saying to his wife Aditi, when I desired offspring, I placed inquiries before Lord Brahma, who was born from a lotus. Now I shall explain to you the same process Lord Brahma instructed me, by which Keshava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied. Any discussion? Yes, Shesha Prabhu.
Jiva Prabhu, you just said this a few minutes ago, at least intellectually. I mean, how value is intellectual understanding in terms of actual advancement in Krishna consciousness?
I would say it's very important. What I meant by that is simply knowing. In other words, I'm reading these, 20 points of, for instance, I'm reading, I read the 20 points of knowledge in the 13th chapter that I referred to. Humility, pride, all of these different things. So, if I read them, and I'm amongst devotees and I'm endeavoring to practice, then I should feel an impetus to try to cultivate them. In other words, practice shaucham, cleanliness. So, my temple commander is supposed to live in the temple. He said to be clean. And here it's confirmed, by Krishna. And Prabhupada gives instruction. And so from that thinking and from that understanding can then come, willing. You may not feel like cleaning it, but eventually you'll do it spontaneously. But at least the willing has to be there. And therefore you actually engage in staying clean. But if you don't associate, you don't read the Gita, the tendency is to get into the modes. And that injunction will go into the background. And so, you be there. You'll get less clean. You'll clean once a week instead of three times a week or every day or something, So reading it is very important, hearing these instructions, because it purifies the intelligence, which after all is our guide, and strengthens it and strengthens the will and the faith. So I would say, of course, intellectually, what I meant by that is that that it begins with understanding, and then it moves toward action. So, if we neglect that part, then it's very likely that we'll diminish our strictness in devotion. Yes.
Do you have to make a conscious effort to pull out the weeds, or just by chanting Hare Krishna and engaging devotional service, the weeds dry up?
Well, what can I say? If you just chant Hare Krishna and you chant purely, everything will follow, certainly. But at the same time, we have to make an effort. Just like Krishna, just like there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. I forget the Sanskrit. Maybe can someone help me? I think it's in the fifth chapter, that it says, by engaging in this way and cultivating transcendental knowledge and also making an effort to control the senses, one can advance. In other words, both things should be there. There's this statement, following the four regular principles. Well, if we're on a spontaneous platform and we're on Sai Baba already, then you don't have to worry about it. You're not going to be attracted. But we're not on that platform. So there is still an idea to enjoy this or that, right? But we understand, no. I took a vow, it's in the Shastra, there's all this, and your mind and your intelligence, gives you the strength to, resist. But it may be an effort, because the temptation is there. So, yes, we should know what they are. Just like, why do we have all the lists? When I say lists, if you go through Bhagavad lists, Lord Krishna gives in the, I forget which chapter it is, but the Uddhava Gita, he gives a whole list of, behavior of devotees, qualities of the devotees the 26 qualities, I think, are in that list. Why should we have those lists? Because we can see, I've somewhat developed this quality, a little humility, but I really should work harder, What about this poetry, you know, being poetic. Well, I don't know about that, you know. maybe I should write a little something. Or, you know, in other words, you have the list because you can see what, you know, how far we have to go. And it gives you the idea that, oh, I should be this way, I should not be this way, I should be this way, enough. And this understanding helps us to develop those qualities or develop to perform those activities. This is part of the science of devotional service. So it's not that, you know, it all comes from our effort. Obviously, it's coming from Krishna, from the blessing. But he wants to see our desire. Just like Arjun, you know, he needed to make the effort to fight. Krishna promised him, yes, you will be victorious. It's already decided. But you still have to make the effort to fight. You have to decide not to leave the battlefield and make the effort to fight. So that's part of our devotion to Krishna. Just like every book distributor knows, you know, that you know, most of it is prayer. You know, it's so hard. If you're not Krishna conscious, you don't do anything. So, but if you're praying constantly, then Krishna gives you the inspiration to what to say and gives you the attitude like that. But that prayer means that you have a desire. You're not at one point and you want to get something. And so that intensity of our effort, intensity of our prayer, will evoke, you know, Krishna's mercy and empower us to develop qualities or to give up bad, good qualities, develop bad, good qualities, give up bad qualities. So it works both ways. And ultimately you get to the platform, yes, it's completely automatic. Just like you have the yasyasti bhakti, there's a verse, yasyasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana sarvaganastata samasate sura, that for the devotees, they have all the good qualities of the demigods, right? And but a non-devotee, even though he may have so good qualities, he has no good qualities because his mind is always running out on the chariot. You know, he's always running out on the chariot of the mind. You know, so one may ask, well, okay, I'm a devotee, so I don't have to worry about getting all the good qualities; they're all going to come. But part of what it means to be a devotee is to culture these qualities, to make the effort. You know, so that's my take on that. Yes, Prabhu.
I don't mean to make anyone feel uncomfortable by this question, but you know everything should be discussed without fear. In many temples nowadays there are chairs which permit the audience to sit high on the speaker.
Acha.
And so I know that some people feel uneasy about this. And could you give your perspective?
I don't want to make you feel bad, Hare Krishna. Don't worry about it. Well, my take on that is that, you know, what happens, I mean, we have, you know, in the temples, the temple that I'm in San Diego, gradually you see more chairs. And what part of it is because gradually people are getting older and they just cannot sit. We have one boy who's a bhakta, problem with his knees, and you know, you just cannot sit on the floor for any length of time. I mean, I could sit for an hour, no problem, but if it's very painful, then that facility is there. So, you know, I mean, ideally, obviously, everyone should be below the speaker. So what can you put the speaker up maybe this high, be above, even if you have a chair. But I think, practically speaking, I mean, I've never felt offended by that. But the etiquette, of course, is that the speaker should be up for, not for himself, but because he's representing Vyasadeva. So, but again, time and circumstance. What are you going to do? Especially like on a Sunday feast, you know, people come, there's no question that they're sitting on the floor. So if you're not going to have the seat higher, then some of the people are going to be above them. But I think we can, I mean, that never bothered me. That's my take on it. I'll go ahead and push me. We had a very lively discussion. Very nice.
When he got the LA temple, Prabhupada really was enlivened by the idea of this, you know, before they straightened it out in their own mental configuration, there was a church situation, and you know where the temple room is now, there were chairs,
right.
And so Prabhupada really liked that. He never wanted it changed. Just for the record, you can read about it.
Yeah,
you
know, but the point is that. But then there was a podium. The speaker
was
still
a podium,
above.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, but still, there's no injunction. Prabhupada liked the idea of the chairs.
But I don't think it was the chairs you were talking about, the fact that it lifts you above the level of the speaker. Yeah, because well, yeah. I mean, some people have to sit on a chair. It's just like, you know, yeah. Physiological. But I mean, isn't it also a fact, I mean, I'm just asking now, that in Prabhupada's day, In L.A., if I recall, sometimes that whole area would be packed up, and they would, then some people, ladies, would be sitting in the balcony, even doing Prabhupada's class.
And the balcony.
I mean, they're sitting. They're way up there, and Prabhupada's down here. This
yeah,
is
that's
it, right?
Thing. After they built the temple room, but
yeah, but I'm saying when in Prabhupada's time, when he came to L.A.
before the new temple room.
No, I'm not talking about that. Just, just the etiquette. We're talking after. Etiquette here, not about you know.
Right. Thing.
So you have that whole area filled with devotees, but some overflow had to go upstairs. So even in Prabhupada's time, he was giving class, and he saw...
Well, they complain, ladies complain, and Prabhupada said, tell them they're dancing on the men's heads.
That's, yeah, that's during the kirtan.
I was going to ask one little...
Let's not go there.
One little question about... it seems to be always a pendulum swinging between that non-devotees have no good qualities, you know, like you quoted, not that you're wrong for quoting it, but... There's the other injunction that one takes gold from a filthy place, nectar from poison. So how do you balance that? I mean, you know, we can say this person has no good qualities, but it seems like they do have qualities that we sometimes need or aspire to or you utilize. So you have to, we can't, a fanatic might take that verse and, you know. And
but, as soon as someone is applying his quality to the service, then he's a devotee. Right? That is a devotee. I mean, you know, there's a lot of absolutes, you know. Everybody is divided in two, right? There's the demons and there's the devotees, right? But we're enjoined to avoid the demons, so where's the preaching? In other words, there's a large middle ground of, like, the innocent, right? In other words, people who are, by their behavior, they may be categorized as demons, they're eating meat or whatever. But they have a little piety or something, and they can be a little receptive to the seed of devotional service. And that's us. Where did we come from? I mean, I wasn't born a devotee, were you? So the point is that there's a vast semi-permeable membrane between the devotees and the demons. I mean, just look at Bali. You know, Bali's a demon, but he's not really. He's actually a devotee. So there's this whole thing going on. So the idea is that, you know, practically anyone, by the influence of a powerful devotee, can get this seed. And if he's fortunate enough to come into the association of devotees, it can be watered, and from the demonic side, he can go into the devotee side. That's my understanding. Who else had a comment? Well, you had your turn. Okay, Loka, you say something.
Where did that concept come from, dovetailing material desires?
Dovetailing?
Yeah, like dovetailing material desires. Is that Shastra, or someone just made that?
Totally. I mean, that was Prabhupada's word. But look at what we see here. The ideal is Dhruva Maharaj. You know, in other words, his desire was material. He wanted to have a huge kingdom. But he met the devotee, great devotee, Narada Muni, who said, okay, you know, you just chant this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. You worship this form of, he taught him about deity worship too, even in the forest. And you meditate on the Lord in the heart, and you'll get your kingdom. You know, that's kind of, so he did. But by the time he was eligible for the kingdom, he didn't want it. Right, he just wanted to get the darshan of Vishnu. So the idea is that, okay, we have material desires, we have skill, we have whatever we have, and it's all being used for material things, therefore it's, you know, taking us down. But those very things can be used for Krishna. I mean, Prabhupada was expert at doing that. You know, Gauga Muni came, you know, whatever he touched turned to money, okay, you make some money for the temple, and the Vaikuntha players, you know, whatever skills you have, they can be used. If they're not, then they'll degrade you. So dovetailing is essential. Yeah. Go ahead. Oh, okay. All right, this will be the last one. We have a strict law here. 8:45.
This isn't my question, but you may be pleased to know that I'm working on developing a hydraulic Vyasasan. And it has a little button, and you can raise or lower it, the speaker, according to how elevated.
False ego, how proud you are, you can pull it over.
Yeah. Also, there will be a trap door underneath. So for those that are really humble, they can just have their head above the ground.
Okay.
But that's not my
question. And what is your question?
Well, the question is, we have our mind, and sometimes the mind is... actually proposing that we become Krishna conscious and it's guided by our intelligence, but at other times the mind is, and it's so strong, it's saying that, making excuses in the whole scenario on why we should either, let's say we're in distress, to utilize a sense gratificatory means of alleviating that distress rather than taking shelter in Krishna.
Right.
So basically, how do you control your mind in that situation when the mind becomes strong like that?
By prayer. And I'll close with this prayer. Rupa Goswami has given so much. He says, Krishna bhavandam vande manmanasamadakadamapayinitapapapankachamakadande. O Krishna, dearest Lord, I bow to you and then entreat, please place the bee of my restless mind in the honey of your lotus feet. Then he describes how even Brahma, deep in trance, cannot achieve his goal, a glimpse of your effulgent toenails, soothing to the soul, but because I've heard your compassion's endless waves, that very vision is the only boon my poor heart craves. Despite great effort, O Madhava, despite great effort, I have not attained a drop of pure devotion. This has brought me endless pain. Yet though it seems impossible to ever fill this need, your monumental power gives me hope I shall succeed. And in the last verse, he says, oh, today, O Lord, my mind is fixed upon your feet, and so I'm tasting endless mellows, wonderful and sweet. I pray that for eternity my mind may there reside to relish luscious honey that defeats ambrosia's pride. So this is a song. Prabhupada actually gives a translation and a purport in the second canto. So we are given, you know, a multitude of prayers in this way. The Hare Krishna mantra is also a prayer. So when the mind is starting to get affected by the modes, you're talking about the mind, then we have to say, Hare Krishna. You know, you have to beat the mind with the shoe. And what is that shoe? What is that broomstick? It is all of these processes, chiefly hearing and chanting. And at a certain point, if we follow it properly and break through, then the mind can actually become our best friend because it just automatically runs to Krishna. That's the definition of pure devotion given by Kapila Muni when he's speaking to his mother. He says, a pure devotee means that as soon as he hears about Krishna, immediately the mind runs there and is completely absorbed in that sound vibration and relishing nectar. And there's never any loss or diminution of the enthusiasm to hear and chant about Krishna. And that brings us to more than 8:45. Forgive me. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.